wishing everyone a Shavuot Tov. We started here on Daf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. We'll see if we can recap whatever is necessary to bring us up to date. First, let's see if we can find the exact place on Daf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. We're about halfway through the Amud. And we're up to the words V'chol Hecha.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So how can I make sure, thank you, that everyone has the place? V'chol Hecha. Let's see. If you're counting up before the lines get wide, let's count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the first word of the line is Bidusahi. Now, let's just recap. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah is of the opinion that we cannot allow Bidika to take place after Shas Isura. Meaning, after midday on the 14th, it's too late for Bidika. The reason for that is that once he's involved in his bedika and he's collecting his chametz, he may inadvertently eat one of those pieces. Now, keep in mind, back in the day, it was very difficult to distinguish between chametz and matzah. They looked very similar. Even today, that's true in certain communities. So imagine he's doing his bedikah, it's ready Shas Isura, and he sees something which he immediately identifies as matzah, and he pops it into his mouth, and lo and behold, it's chametz. So the main point here that we have to keep in mind is that with regard to chametz, Rabbi Yehuda has what's called a gzera. And that gzera is that whenever you're involved in that, you know, handling that thing which is asur, you might inadvertently come to eat it. You might violate the Isur. That's the Gzera of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, well, in the case of Chadash, we didn't find that Rabbi Yehuda was Machmir. He instituted this Gzera. And the Gemara says, because in the case of Chadash, that's called Bedili Mine Inchi. Means it's also the whole year round. Whereas in the case of Chametz, it's lo bedili mine inchi, meaning the whole year round, he doesn't separate himself, he eats the Chametz. Oh, so now the Gemara asks the following, V'chol Hecha, are you assuming, therefore, whenever the lo bedili mine, Gaza Rabbi Yehuda, I'm going to quote to you a case, which is likewise lo bedili mine. And you would definitely assume that in this case we're talking about shemen, that he uses shemen, he drinks the shemen and he puts it into salad, whatever he does with the shemen. And yet Rabbi Yehuda is not, he's not afraid that he might take the shemen and eat the shemen. I'm going to use the phrase eat the shemen, you'll fill in the missing blanks, you know, whatever you want to say, he used it for a salad, whatever. Okay, is that alright? Okay. So here's the case. We have a Mishnah in Perek Bamem Adlikin. You'll all be familiar with this Mishnah if you follow the Ashkenazic minhag of reading these Mishnahs on Friday night. Vasnan, the Mishnah says, Lo yikov adam shofer shal beitza. What they used to do in order to have oil drip into the nair is the receptacle where there's a psila. Right, there's a wick and it's lit, so he lit his nair on Erev Shabbos, and what he does is, in order to have a constant flow or supply of shemen, he sets up a higher receptacle that's a little bit out on an elevated plane, and they used to take a shvoferishal beitza, so they would crack open an egg and they would use half of the egg as a container, and they would pour oil into this, and it was tipped over a little bit in such a way that it would gradually tipin, you know, by little drops, it would drip into the nair, so that the nair could continue lit over the period of a long time. So again, according to the Tanakhama, the Mishnah, which is not going to be Rabbi Yehuda, we're not allowed to do this. We're not allowed to set up this system on Erev Shabbos, which will allow the constant dripping of oil into the Ner. Bishvil Shiftehei Menatefes, Menatefes, that it drips one drop at a time. And the reason for this is because the Chachamim were afraid that he might take the oil and eat it, and forget the fact that this oil is feeding the flame. Now, if the oil is feeding the flame drip by drip, drop by drop, then you're not allowed to take the oil. Why can't you take the oil? So I'm going to have a long discussion about that. For the time being, let's just accept it as axiomatic, because we're going to have about three different sheets about why you're not allowed to take the oil. And we're afraid that you might be tempted, because you need the oil, to take the oil out of the beitza. And now the chiddush of the Rabban is, they went even a step further. Afilu, even if this container that's tipped over and that's dripping oil is hishal cheres, it's made out of pottery, earthenware. Now, generally speaking, in the case of earthenware, people find it a little bit disgusting to take oil out of an earthenware jug, because the earthenware has a certain kind of a smell to it, or perhaps it's got some filth to it, so usually we wouldn't do so. But nevertheless, if he was desperate enough, he would even take the oil and extract it from this kli, this shfoferes shel cheres. Rabbi Yehuda Matir. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's all allowed. I'm not afraid that maybe he'll take the oil out, and even though everybody eats oil the whole year round, in other words, it certainly fits into the chametz mode of lo bedili mina yinshi. So why is it that in the case of chametz, Rabbi Yehuda is machmir, and he institutes this gzera, because he's afraid, since lo bedili mina, he's used to eating the chametz all year round, while he's doing the bedikas chametz, he might take a piece of chametz and eat it? But yet in the case of shofar shel beitza, where again he's used to eating the oil the whole year round, and yet Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about the fact that he might take out the oil. So the Gemara's, let's just read the Gemara's answer, and then we're going to come back to our question. Why is it prohibited to take the oil? That the Chachamim said, you know, we're afraid he might take the oil and eat it. But the Gemara's answer here is that Hosam Mishum Chumr de Shabbos Mivdal Bedili, which means that Shabbos is much more Chumr than Chametz. Shabbos is a cardinal sin, and a person would never consider violating a cardinal sin like the chumrah of Shabbos. In chametz, it's not so chamur. Again, chametz is pretty chamur, but it's not so chamur. And keep in mind, Rabbi will say, that we're talking about midday on the 14th, because according to Rashi sheet, at least, the whole machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim about whether you're allowed to do bdika after Shas Isuro, that means from midday until nightfall. Now, the Isur Chametz at that point is not so chumrah. What do I mean? There are three levels of chumrah. There's one chumrah which is a regular lav, standard losaseh, which if you violate, you get malchus. Then there's a higher level lav, which is called a chiyuv kares. And then there's finally the worst level, which is a cardinal sin, a chiyuv misa. Now, the case of chametz fits into two categories. It could fit into the category of a regular standard lav and generates malchus. It could go, if it's upgraded, it could be a chiyuv kares. And the difference is going to be that chametz on Erev Pesach, during that 6-hour period between midday and nightfall, is a regular lav and it doesn't generate kares. When does the Isra Achilas chametz get jacked up to the level of kares? That's only after nightfall with the inception of the Chag itself. So now if we compare Shabbos to Chametz on Erev Pesach, after the midday, then you're talking about two polar ends of the spectrum, where Shabbos is the most Chamur, and Chametz would be the most basic, or shall we call it the standard lot. So when does Rabbi Yehuda have this Gzeira in the case of Bedikas Chametz, that once he's involved in the Bedika, and it's after Shas Yisuro, he might be tempted to eat it. That's only when you're talking about a standard lav. But if you jack it up to the level of Shabbos, which is Chamirale, because Shabbos is so Chomer, it generates a Chiv Misa, then even Rabbi Yehuda would say that we don't need to institute this Gzeira. A person would be very careful about abstaining from an action which would incur a Chiv Misa. Now we have to understand the following. When the Gemara says that Shabbos is Chamira, does the Gemara mean that if he'll take the oil, he'll actually be Chayv Misa? Because again, we haven't yet answered the question, which is what we want to address now. What would be the nature of the Isur of taking the oil? Now, the Poshup Shad, before we see the famous Shita, the Rambam here in this Sugya, is that we're talking about Meleches Kibui. Kibui is one of the 39 malachas, and if you would violate Meleches Kibui by extinguishing a fire, you would be Chayv Misa. And then you could take this Gemara literally, that Chamira means we're afraid he might violate a capital sin. The problem with this is that Lechora, this is not Kibui. This is what's called Gram Kibui. Are you familiar with that? Let me write that on the board. Gram Kibui. Okay, I was going to write it on the board, but I didn't look out here. I wonder why this is not writing here. I guess I got to write it. So gram is gimel resh mem, right? Gram kibui. Now gram kibui means when you have fuel that's feeding a flame and you take the fuel before it gets into the flame, so then that's causing the flame to go out, but it's not putting it out directly. Maybe you've heard of the issues about Shabbos clocks. You know, are you allowed to change the Shabbos clock on Shabbos so it'll go out earlier? That's called Gram Kibui. And some of the poskim say if you want to keep it on later and it'll go off later, that you're allowed to do on Shabbos, but you're not allowed to make it go out earlier. That's called Gram Kibui. Again, don't draw any conclusions from what I just said. Just don't fetishkak, forget it. But anyway, it's something called Gram Kibui. Now, Gram Kibui is Asur, but it might even be a Darabana. We're not even sure if Gram Kibui is Doraisa. But even if it's Doraisa, it's a secondary kind of Isur. And it would not constitute an Isur Chamur, like the Gemara describes Shabbos here. So let me read to you part of a very long presentation here in the notes in the Masifta. And Rashi in Masechta Shabbos in Bamibad Likim says that the Isur that would be violated if he were to take the oil out of the Shofares, out of this receptacle, would be Kibui. And Rashi adds a few words, again not here but in Masechta Shabbos. Rashi says, Me'achar shehiktos ha-shemen l'ner, that once he designates this shemen for the ner, Hareu nechshav l'machabe, that's considered kibui. In other words, if you have a step-by-step process where there's some distance between step A and step Z until finally the nair is being fed by this chadgadya here, this whole domino theory, so that's gram kibui. But if you've already designated the oil in such a way that the oil is literally feeding the flame, then Rashi holds that that's kibui. And Tosus says that it can't be considered kibui unless the light of the nair goes down. It's mismayit. How would you say diminished? What word would you? There's probably a better word than if the light, goes down in its intensity. Anybody have a word for me? Stuart, you're usually good at you're my English man. What?
Diminished.
Okay. I'm sure there's a better word, but. So Tosus says that miuta or is what's called machabe. In other words, if there's a flame and you diminish that flame, that's called machabe. But Eilafar, she's not willing to accept Rashi Shita, that he's of speeding up the process of kibui, because that's only grama, gram kibui. So again, both Rashi and Tosus assume that this sugya and the gzeira of the chachamim here, that maybe he'll take the oil, is based on a doraisa, on a full-fledged violation of kibud. The question is why and how. Rashi seems to say because since there's not oil coming, once you take away the oil, the kibud is going to happen at time T1, which is earlier than time T2, meaning in the original set, the candle would remain lit for another 5 minutes or another half hour, and now it's going to go out earlier. That's called kibud. Tosfos says that can't be so, because that's not called kibud, that's called gram kibud. But Tosfos claims that the moment that he takes the oil, the fire itself goes down in its intensity. And the Rosh says that he doesn't believe that by taking netilas hashemen min hashfoferes, taking the oil, is mismayit or haner. He says it can't be. There's no mute in the or haner. Again, Tosfos thinks that it's almost immediate that when you cut off the supply of oil, the light is going to go down in its intensity. And that's considered kibui because he's mamaites oro. But the Rush points out, no, it's not so. It's not that immediately the light is going to go down in its intensity. And therefore the Rush comes back to Rashi Shita that he's mamayr es hakibui. So the Rush asks Tosfos Kasha, well, if he's mamayit, he makes the kibui earlier. He says, Ein zeh gram kibui. He says, mekol makom. He says there are two categories of gram kibui. He says there's gram kibui, which is bedavar chitzoni, right? When you're taking out something, let's say, for example, imagine there's a fire here, and there's a river going towards the fire, but there's a dam, and the dam stops the water from extinguishing the fire. Now I remove the dam. You know, that would be a gram kibud. Why? Because that's bedavar chitzoni. I'm just removing a barrier, and now the water is going to extinguish the fire. But he says there's another kind of gram kibud. Aval kshunase b'shemen atzmo hagorem es hadleika. If your gram kibud is by stopping the shemen from feeding the fire, that's considered kibud. So again, let's just summarize before we get to the Rambam's radical change in understanding of the Shita. There are two ways of understanding that the Gemara means here, that by taking the oil, he violates kibui, and that's a doraisa. That's a full-fledged melechas kibui. One way is the way Tosfos says, that he's mamayit the or, and the other way is the way Rashi and the Rosh interpreted, that it's considered what? It's considered gram. It's considered gram kibui because he's mamayres hakibui, but it's not a gram kibui chitzoni that's external to the light itself, but it's a gram kibui in the light itself, because since the shemen is feeding the light, it's almost as if the shemen and the ner are one entity, and by taking the shemen for himself, you know, to eat the shemen, he is putting out the fire. The Rambam didn't accept either of these two interpretations, and the Rambam says that what we're talking about here in this sugya is none other than muktzah. That's pretty way out. We're talking about muktzah. We're not talking about a violation of a meleches kibui. So again, we're not talking the way Rashi and Tosfos understood it, that we're really involved in meleches kibui, but rather ha'isur netilas shemen me'ashfoferes eino bechlal mishum kibui el mishum isur mukta. In other words, basically the Rambam holds like Tosfos that if you remove the fuel that's feeding the flame, that's called gram kibui. On the other hand, he doesn't agree with Tosfos that there's miur es ha'or, like the Rush objected. And therefore, the Rambam can only come up with the following possibility, that the shemen is muktzah. Now, why is the shemen muktzah? Does anybody know what that's called? What kind? There are many different subcategories of muktzah. Excellent. Muktzah machmas isur. Again, now what exactly is the Hisa? Then we get back to Rashi and Tosis, whether it's Gram Kibui, whether it's Mamaitis Ha'or, but whatever it is, the Shemen has now been designated for this Nair, and that makes it Muktzah Mas Isa. Muktzah Machmas Isa is a very severe, a very high-ranking Isur Muktzah, because there are many categories of Muktzah that Rav Shimon doesn't accept. For example, Rav Shimon does not accept what's called Muktzah Machmas Mius. Basically, according to Rav Shimon, the only case of Muktzah is what's called Grogros Vitzimukim, you know, where you actually designate it in such a way that it's not edible. But here the Shemen is clearly edible, and therefore that would not be Rav Shimon's Muk. So the answer is that Rav Shimon is Modeh, apparently, that there is Muk in the case of Mukta Machmas Isur. Says the Pnei Yoshua, how does the Rambam shtim with our Gemara? Our Gemara says we're going to make a gzera. We're not going to allow you to set up, according to the Chachamim of Yehuda, this whole contraption in which the Shofaris is feeding the Nair, because we're afraid you'll take from the Shemen, which according to Rambam is a violation of the Isur Muktzah. So the Pnei Yoshua says the following, that Masha Maksha Gemara Midivir Rabbi Yehuda B'Shabbos Halo Isur Mistapik Eina L'midir Rabbanon V'itachin Shalom Choshash Rabbi Yehuda L'Isur Doraisa. And the Gemara answers, no, Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about this because of the Chumra of Shabbos. Says the Pnei Yoshua, Pirish B'Divir Rabbi Yehuda Mishnasenu Bod Kibishas Abir Mishnasenu. Okay, fine, we don't need all that. And basically he says the following, that the Gemara thinks at this point that since Muktzah, I just want to get the right language here, I'm sorry. Mamaksha Gemara. Right, but so Bodkin. So what's the Gemara's question now? Rabbi Yehuda does not allow you to be Bodek after Shas Isur Chametz because you might come to violate an Isur Chametz. That's an Isur Doraisa. Why does the Gemara think, therefore, that Rabbi Yehuda should be Gozer in the case of Shofar Shel Beitza, which is only a violation of Muktzah? And if that's a violation of Muktzah, that's not even a Doraisa. Pnei Yoshua asks another kasha. He says the following, that even if you hold that this is an Isur Kibui, this is called a Malacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa, and therefore it certainly would not be a violation of Doraisa. And does anybody know about Malacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa? Does that ring any bell? I mean, again, we can't learn all of Hilchos Shabbos right here now, but suffice it to say that if you're not interested in Kibui here, you have no interest in Kibui. It's like the case where he's digging a hole in the ground, but he has no interest in the hole. He really just wants to take the dirt and use the dirt somewhere else. Well, again, I'm not getting into Dov Shein Miskavi right now, but just as far as Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is concerned, this would be a classical case of a Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, and yet the Gemara equates it with Chametz. I mean, Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is L'Chora, in the worst case scenario, an Isur D'Rabbanan, but it certainly is not like eating Chametz. So why does Gemara think that Rabbi Yehuda just has a gzerif, he might come to eat the chametz during the bedika, and equate that with the case he might take the oil, even if you all like Rashi and Tosfos, that we're talking about a meleches kibui here, but it's not a meleches kibui at tzricha legufa. He has no interest in whatsoever in putting out the nair. On the contrary, he wants his cake and eat it. He wants his oil and eat it too. He wants the oil to feed the fire, keep the fire going, but then he wants to eat the oil. So it seems that the Pnei Yoshua is bothered by this sugya according to everybody. But let's even grant that somehow we could get by this problem. But what's the Gemara's answer? The Gemara answers that Hasam, in the case of Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda holds Mishum Chumra de Shabbos Mivdal B'dile. So do you see, Rabbosai, we're going to have to take a much more liberal interpretation of this Gemara. What does it mean, Mishum Chumrat Shabbos Mivdal Bedili? Not because he's violating a capital crime at this moment when he takes the Shemen, the way I presented it to you before, but rather that he's very careful about the Isurim of Shabbos. In other words, Shabbos itself is considered chamur. It's considered very strict in his eyes. Okay. The Rabbi de Shabbos HaShabbos. Let's go on. Now we're going to have a question from a Mishnah in Shabbos, which records Machlokas Shin Rabbi Yudin Chachamim. And once again, we're going to see a discrepancy between the Chachamim in Bedika and the Chachamim in Shabbos, and Rabbi Yehudin Bedik and Rabbi Yehudin Shabbos. No, I'm sorry. Scratch that. The Rami de Shabbos ad de Shabbos. The Gemara is now asking a question from the Mishnah of Shfoferes, where we said that the Chachamim are Machmir in Shfoferes, and Rabbi Yehuda is Mekil, and another Mishnah in Shabbos, where we're going to find that Rabbi Yehuda is going to be the Machmir. To Sanya, what's the case in Shabbos? Chevel Dli. So in other words, they have a well, and they have a Dli. A Dli is a bucket, right? And they use the bucket to dig the water and draw the water out of the well. Now, in order to attach the Dli to the well, because otherwise somebody's going to walk away with the Dli, or maybe the wind will blow it away, so we need what's called a Chevel. A Chevel is a rope. And this rope is knotted down to the bucket itself. Shenifsak. And now the cord was cut. And he wants to retie it. Now, tying something on Shabbos is called Meleches Kosher, right? So the Braisa says, Lo Yehi Koshro, he cannot but actually tie what we call a kesher shel kayama, a permanent knot, because that would be a violation of Melech HaShabbos. It's one of the Lamed Tes Melechos. Can we allow him to do something which would, on the one hand, serve his purpose to make sure that the Dli is tied down to the well, we'll call it to the Be'er Mayim, but at the same time, he's not violating Meleches Kosher. So supposedly what we need is some sort of a substitute knot. And that substitute knot is not called a Kesher Shel Kayama. It's not a permanent knot. After Shabbos, he'll come back and he'll fix it the right way. But right now, he can patch it up in a temporary basis. So what do you have in mind, Rabosai? What case do you have in mind? If you look at your feet, right?
Tying your shoes,
right? So what do we do? That's called aniva. And aniva is not considered a kesher shel kayama. Why is that? Because all you have to do is just pull the string and it falls apart. Kesher shel kayama is such that you can pull the string from now until doomsday. It's not going to come apart. On the contrary, it might even get more permanent. So the Chachamim say, Ela onvo. He's allowed to make a kesher she'ena shel kayama. It's not a permanent knot. And that's not a violation of Shabbos. And the chiddush here is that we're not worried that if we allow him to do an aniva, maybe he'll think that he's allowed to tie it down. Or maybe he'll confuse aniva as a temporary knot with a permanent knot. No, the rabbanon are not afraid. You know, they allow you to make this aniva. And I would say thank God, because otherwise how would we put our shoes on? Unless you wear loafers, or you're too lazy to untie your shoes, right? But if you, and then we have the problem, of course, of the what you call the glila, you know, the person who ties a knot around the Sefer Torah. So in all these cases, we're going to try to find something that substitutes for kesher shel kayama, but achieves the same goal, and it's not a permanent knot. And the Rabbanan are going to say, that's okay. You know, find whatever method you want, even aniva, which is very close to being a knot. But nevertheless, it's mutter. And if it's mutter, we're not going to make a gzera. Now, are the Rabbanan interested in? They have a sort of an agenda here to be makil because it's a desperate situation and he doesn't want to lose his dli. Or are we just saying simply that the Rabbanan are not worried about gzeira? They're not worried that if we allow you to do an aniva, you might come to create a kesher shel kayom. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no. Rabbi Yehuda does not allow you to make an aniva. Now keep in mind, this is the same Rabbi Yehuda who, in the previous sugi of Shvoferes, allowed to set up this Shvoferes, and he wasn't afraid that you might come to eat the Shemen, which would be a violation of Alechas Machabe. Here, he's apparently afraid that if we allow you to do an Aniva, you might come to what? To tie permanently and violate a Melech. So when does we need a kind of an evaluation here and set up a system, right, a standard. When does Rabbi Yehuda say, well, let's not allow you to do X on Shabbos because it might lead to Y, and when does he allow it? In the case of Shvoferes, he allows you, and he's not afraid that you'll eat the oil. In the case of the Chevel Shenifsak, then he says, no, I'm not going to allow you to do an Aniva. What will I allow you to do? Is Korech Olav Punda o psakya. Now it's interesting, the word psakya, which is an Aramaic word, comes from the Shoresh sak. S-O-C-K. I don't know. My friend, what's his name? Moseson, is that his name? Right, he's an expert on words, you know, in different languages. Here there seems to be a similarity. In any event, so what is a funda and what is a psakya? A funda is translated as a chagora chalula. In other words, they used to make sometimes a belt that was empty on the inside. Right? It had a vacuum, what's it called? A vacuum on the inside. That's called a punda. And basically what he does with this punda is he wraps it around the dli. So he doesn't really tie it at any point whatsoever. He's just attaching it to the dli by wrapping it around the dli. Now a psakya is some sort of a I'm going to use the word a belt in the sense that it looks like this punda, except it's used on the legs. And as you wrap, it's a sock that you wrap your foot in. And once again, he's going to use this kind of a nylon stocking or whatever it's made of, and just wrap it around the dli. Ubilvad shaloyan venu. But the condition is that he doesn't take this fundo or this psakya and make it into a bow. He's not allowed to make a bow out of it. He's only allowed to wrap it around. That's called kricha. It means that Rabbi Yehuda is afraid that if we allow you to do an aniva, then the jump between an aniva, which is also a kind of a knot, and a full-fledged knot, a kesher shel kayom, is so close that we have to institute this gzeira. In the case of shoferes shel beitza, Rabbi Yehuda was not afraid that he might eat the shemen. Now, at the same time, we can postulate here a stira in Chachamim, because the Chachamim said in the case of Shvoferes we have to worry about the fact that he may take the Shemen out of the Shvoferes. Here, the Chachamim are very liberal, allowing you to tie this bow, and they're not afraid it might come to what? To a Kesh Shal Kayoma. So therefore, Kashid Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, Kashid Rabbanan, Rabbanan, we have a double contradiction. Gemara says the following, Rabbanan, Rabbanan, Lo Kasha. Shemen b'shemen michlaf aniva b'kshira lo michlaf. The Chachamim think that if a person is used to eating shemen, then he doesn't realize that the shemen in the shoferes is different. You know, he makes a jump for the shemen, but in the case of aniva, aniva is a whole different type of time, and therefore there are two clearly identified categories. One is kshira, which is knotting something, and the other is aniva, where he ties a bow. And that's not like kshira. It doesn't remind him, it's not similar, and it won't be confused with kshira. So if we tell him clearly, these are the guidelines. You're not allowed to tie a knot on this dli, but you're allowed to tie a bow around it, then he'll understand, and he's not going to make the next jump. There's no michlaf. every gzera is based on michlaf, that if we allow A, he'll come to B, because A and B are very, very similar. But in the case of Shemin, there's michlav. But in the case of Aniva and Kshira, there's no michlav. To Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda Lokasha, we made a big mistake in understanding Rabbi Yehuda. We thought Rabbi Yehuda prohibits Aniva in the case of the Dli because of the Gzeira that he might come to Kshira. No. Rabbi Yehuda, lav mishum de gazer Aniva to Kshira. Rabbi Yehuda is not based on Gzeira, but rather el mishum de kasavra Aniva gufa. Kshira he. Rabbi Yehuda defines Aniva as a kesher shel kayama, meaning even though you could pull out the string and therefore the whole bow would come apart, but nevertheless, as long as you don't do so, the bow, because it's tied one around the other, one loop around the other, that's a permanent kesher. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you violate Aniva, that's a violation of Meleches Kosher, which is one of the 39 Av Melachos, Deoraisa. The Rami Rabbanan Ad Rabbanan. Now we're going to ask a question from the Rabbanan in the case of Aniva to another statement of the Rabbanan, meaning we've just established that Aniva, according to Rabbanan, is Mutar on Shabbos. And by the way, what's fascinating about this sugya, normally we distinguish between, we have what I call the middle ground. You know, you have something that's a melacha d'oraisa on Shabbos, you have something that's mutar on Shabbos. And then in the middle we have what's called potar avolasa, we have d'rabbanans. You have a case which is so similar to the melacha d'oraisa that it's aser. Here, in this machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim regarding chevel delish and ifsak, we have a very extreme machlokas from one polar extreme to the other. The Rabbanan are going to say you're allowed to do the Aniva. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say you have to bring a Chatas if you do the Aniva, because it's considered Kesher. Disnan, we have a Mishnah at the end of Masechta Shabbat, says Koshrim Dli Bipsakya Avolo Bechevel Rabbi Yehuda Matir. Now this is something interesting. All of a sudden the Chachamim allow you Koshrim Dli only in a psakia. Remember, psakia was that kind of belt that you wrap around, you know, you wrap around the dli. You know, it's normally used to wrap around, let's say, your legs. And now you're wrapping it around the dli. And the Chachamim say that you're allowed to do that because it's not a kesher shel kayama. Avolo bechevel, but you're not allowed to use a chevel. A real rope. So again, these belts that we spoke about, psakya and punda, they're not made of some sort of a substance that is a permanent substance. And therefore, a person is allowed to do this. Now again, keep in mind that the Rabbanan originally, in the case of Chevel Dli, they allowed Aniva. Correct? And so what's the contradiction here? Here it says, Koshrin Dli Bipsakya, which is that belt that we said. Avolo Bechevel. So one second. We don't know yet, at this point, we don't see apparent contradiction here, because certainly there are abundant in the case of Dli that we started with at Brisa. They permitted Psakya. I mean, even Rabbi Yehuda permitted Psakya. And then it says Rabbi Yehuda Matir. Rabbi Yehuda allows even tying it with a Chevel. So let's see if we can figure out what the Gemara's question is. Chevel Demai. This machlokas between Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, where the Chachamim say you're allowed to use a psakya, but you're not allowed to use a chevel, and Rabbi Yehuda's matir. What is the case? Ilema, if we assume it's chevel di alma, which means it's your classical kind of a rope, a cord that you use to tie a dli, so then the Rabbi Yehuda matir. How could Rabbi Yehuda allow you to use a chevel? A chevel means that you're going to tie it with a permanent knot, which is a malacha d'oraisa. Oh. Now, the question is this really a kesher shel kayama? And he says, devadai osi levetule, meaning he's not going to take it apart. If he ties it with a chevel, then that's a permanent situation. What do you do with a chevel? You tie it. In this case, you tie it down to the bucket so the bucket doesn't get lost. So it can't be that Rabbi Yehuda, when he allows you to use a chevel to tie down your dli, that this should be taken literally, that we're talking about a classical chevel, which he would be mavatil. Mavatil means he would use it permanently to attach the dli to the be'er mayim. Now, let's say a chevel, you go into a hardware store and they charge you, let's say, 50 shekel for chevel. That's not such an expensive. So if he wants to be mevatel the chevel and leave it there on a permanent basis, then that's okay. Because he's not going to hesitate doing so. He's not going to suffer a tremendous financial loss in the case of a chevel. And that's a problem, because then it becomes a kesher shel kayoma. So it cannot be that Rabbi Yehuda, when he was allowing a chevel, he was talking about your standard chevel that's very inexpensive, relatively inexpensive, because if he's tying a knot on this chevel, that's a malacha d'oraisa. El Pshita, the Gemara says, we can't be talking about such a cheap chevel, but rather chevel de gardi. Gardi means the weavers. Now, the weavers used a kind of a very specific material, and it's worth a lot of money. And if that be the case, then he's not being mevatel it. No, it's definitely a kesher she'eino shel kayom. It's only a temporary kesher. It's not a permanent kesher. Ein lachshos shem yevatlenu. Why? Because this is the weaver's rope, and you would not waste a weaver's rope on tying down your dli. I mean, the weaver's rope, which is called chevel de gardi, is probably worth more than the dli itself. So to tie down the dli with a chevel de gardi makes no sense. So what he's going to do is Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm going to allow you to do this on a temporary basis, because I'm going to definitely assume that you're going to untie that knot in order to replace the chevel gardi and give it back to the organ, to redesignate it for its original purpose, because it's a very expensive kind of core. But nevertheless, Gozru Rabbanon, according to the Chachamim, against Rabbi Yehuda, they made the gzera chevel de gardi. Why did they prohibit chevel de gardi? After all, he would never be mevatel chevel de gardi and leave it there on a permanent basis for the sake of his bucket. And the answer is otu chevel de alma, because if we allow him to use this chevel, namely chevel de gardi, because it's very expensive and there's no chashash of bittel, then tomorrow, or maybe next Shabbos, I should say, he's going to use a chevel de alma. He won't make a distinction here, and he'll think that you allow him to use any standard chevel and tie a knot. And even if you warn him, and we say, well, tie it in a way that you know it's temporary, not permanent, but nevertheless, he may want to be mevatel it, because why should he bother with the hassle after Shabbos of replacing it with another chevel? I mean, he doesn't mind being mevatel that chevel. It's not worth that much money. He doesn't suffer such a loss. So, atu chevel di alma. So now, at this point, we have the following contradiction. In the case of the first price of Chevel Dali, Shenifsak, the Chachamim were not gozer. They allowed you to do an aniva. They weren't afraid that if we allow you to do an aniva, you're going to confuse an aniva with a kesher shel kayoma. As we said before, aniva gufa is, what was the language of the Gemara again? Aniva bikshira lo michlaf. So if the two types of knots, according to the Chachamim say that we're not afraid that you'll confuse one type of knot with the other, because they're two separate types of knots. But in the case of chevel de gardi, when two types of ropes, here the Chachamim would go there, and they were afraid if we allow you to use one type of a rope, you'll come to use another type of rope. So the Gemara answers in. You're right. Aniva is not similar to the case of chevel de gardi. Why? Because chevel bechevel michlaf, if you're talking about two different types of rope, one rope that's used for the weavers and one rope that's used for, you know, your rank and file, then they're very similar. and he'll make a mistake between one chevel. If you allow him to use a chevel de gardi today, he'll use a regular chevel tomorrow. But adiva v'kshira, when you're not dealing with two different designations of what the chevel, this kind of cord, is designated for, but rather you're dealing with two different types of knots, lo michlef, then each knot is different, and he won't come to be michlef. Now the Gemara goes back to Rabbi Yehuda's sheet. Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of Chadash, was very lenient, and he allowed you to cut down the Chadash, and he wasn't afraid that you would eat it. So the principle was that kol hecha de badal mineh, since during the entire year he abstains from eating chadash, lo gazer Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is not afraid that he might eat chadash. Is that so? For Tanan, we have a Mishnah in Masechta de Bechoros. Now your firstborn animal, if it's a kosher animal, has to be brought on the Mizbeach. And that's called Bechor Behema Tahora. Now, with regard to this animal that has to be brought on the Mizbeach as a Bechor, we have a serious financial investment. There's a lot of money at stake over here, because if this Bechor is lost, he's going to have to replace it. And now what happens is the Bechor is suffering from high blood pressure. This animal is suffering from high blood pressure. Now, at the time of the Gemara, what was the procedure to reduce high blood pressure? Hakazas hadam. They would pierce the veins in such a way that they would remove the dam. The problem is that there are certain veins in the animal's body that if you remove the dam, the animal becomes a balmum. So now he's in a bind. Why? Because Bechor Shachazo Dam, this animal, which is a Bechor Behema Tahora, and it's now suffering from high blood pressure, and he's in a bind. Why? Because if he doesn't do anything, the animal's going to die. If on the other hand he does something, he might make a mum, and there's an Isa called Asur Lahatil Mum B'Kodshin. You're not allowed to put a blemish in Kodshin. So now we study the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Afilu hu mes." I mean, even if the situation is evaluated in such a way that if you don't take action and you don't immediately bloodlet, then the animal is going to die. Nevertheless, ein makizin lo dam. If the animal has to die, so the animal will die. That's not your problem. But if you would actively bloodlet, then Rabbi Yehuda says you're going to make a mum into the animal, and that you're not allowed to do. Also, lahatil mum b'kodshim. Again, when I say kodshim, I mean kodshim mizbeach. Something that has to go on the mizbeach, you're not allowed to create a mum. You may recall the whole sugya of the agada to how the churban abayis took. You remember that whole story about kamsa bar kamsa in Masechta Gittin. So the whole thing was that there was a fellow who was so insulted by Kamsa, or by Bar Kamsa, I don't remember which one was which, that he put a mum in the kodshim, and he told the Roman emperor, the Jews will not be willing to bring this karban on your behalf, because he put a mum in it. Okay, that's a whole anyway, also lahatil bo mum b'kodshim. Oh, now there are two different types of veins in the animal. So the Chachamim say, you know what, as long as we instruct him to bloodlet in a way that he will not create a mum, we tell him exactly how to do it, then Chachamim yakis, he's allowed to be makis the dam to save the animal. And at the same time we can direct him and limit him to those parts of the innards of the animal which will not be make a mum. So it works like this. Rabbi Yehuda is afraid that if we allow you to be makiz dam, in a way that you won't create a mum, you might make a mistake and make a mum. You know, put the needle in the wrong vein. The Chachamim. By the way, things have happened even in hospitals today where they put the thing in the wrong vein. Anyway, so the Chachamim say, no, we're not afraid. As long as we direct it, we tell them exactly how to do the Hakazas Dam, we're not afraid that it'll be Matil Bo Mum. Okay. Now, how does this tie in to our sugi of Chadash? We said in the case of Chadash, Lo Gazer Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is going to allow you to cut down the new crop. He's not going to be afraid that maybe you'll eat from the new crop that's Chadash, because Bedili Minei. Now here, we're talking about a case of Kodshim. Kodshim is classical Bedili Minei. Meaning, to the same extent that Chodesh is also the whole year round, so too Kodshim is also the whole year round. And the Iser of Hatolos Mum B'Kodshim applies straight across the board. It's not like Chametz, for example, which is Lo B'Dili, meaning it's only also for 7 days. So therefore, if Rabbi Yehuda, in the case of Hakosas Dam, in a Bechar, in Kodshim, we were afraid that it might lead to Hatolas Mum, then in the case of Chadash, Rabbi Yehuda should have consistently said that we're not going to allow you to cut down the Chadash because it might lead to Achilas HaChadash. So the Gemara answers that there's another element in the equation here, in the case of a Bechar. Hasam, Mitov, Sha'adam, Bohul, here we're turning to Daf Yud Alpha, Beis Alma Mono. Amrinan Isharisle, B'makum She'eno Simbo, Mim Osulim Mevad, B'makom sha'osim bo mum. Okay, that's a mouthful. Let's see if we can explain what the Gemara is saying here. We have a principle here that the Gemara is formulating according to Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to see soon how the Chachamim deal with this principle. And that is Adam Bohul Al Mamono. When someone is trying to save an object of value, then he becomes bohul, he becomes totally overwhelmed by it. You know, he loses his cool, so to speak. And what we're afraid is that since he's so desperate, he doesn't want this animal to die, because that's going to cause him a loss of an animal that's worth a lot of money, and the animal is now in a sakana situation because the animal is suffering from high blood pressure. So I'm reading what we're going to be afraid of is that Isharisle, if you allow him to do this Hakazas Dam procedure and bloodlet, then even though you tell him, well, do it b'makom, do it on this vein, which is not going to create a mum, asi lemevad b'makom sholsim bo mum. He is so bohul, he's so overwhelmed, he is so confused, he's so desperate about saving his mamon, that he will not differentiate between this vein and that vein. And therefore, even though in the case of Kodshim we're talking about Bedili Minei, nevertheless Rabbi Yehuda felt that there was a compelling reason to institute this Gzeirah and prohibit Hakazas Dam based on the principle of Adam Bohul Al Mamono. Now we have to turn to the other side. What about the Rabbanan? Don't they accept the principle of Adam Bohul Al Mamono? How could they be mati or allow him to do the Hakazas Dam over here on this vein, and they're not afraid that he might do the Hakazas Dam in another vein? So the Rabbanan say the following. We're going to take this principle of Adam Bohul Al Mamono, and we're going to present it in the opposite perspective. Why? Kolshken, how much more so? Lo sharisle klal osi lemevid. If we're going to instruct him that he's not allowed to do that because it's dam, he's so bol amamono that we have to be afraid that he'll violate the isur. He's going to go ahead. He's going to do the Hakazas Dam against the permission of the Chachamim because he's so bohul. And once he does it without the instruction of the Chachamim, certainly he's not going to be careful and distinguish between a makom she'ein osim bo mum and a makom she'yesh osim bo mum. So again, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are both coming from the same, so to speak, principle, but they're applying it in two opposite ways. Both of them agree that Adam bohul al mamono, that he's desperate to save the Bechar. But Rabbi Yehuda thinks since he's desperate to save the Bechar, if we allow him to do the Hakazas, he'll come to make a mum. And the Chachamim say no, that if we tell him you're not allowed to do the Hakazas, he's going to go ahead on his own. He's so bohul, and he's going to do the Hakazas anyway. And if he does that kosa anyway, we're in deep trouble because he's not going to be careful about the difference between a makom she'osim bo mum and a makom she'ein osim bo mum. So the Gemara asks, "Umi amrinan l'Rabbi Yehuda adam bohul alma mono?" Do we say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, he accepts this principle of adam bohul alma mono? Vas now we have a mission in Beitza. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ein mekadrim habehema. What they used to do is when the animal was infested with all sorts of flies and mosquitoes and dirt that got caught up in the hair of the animal, they used to comb the animal's back. And that's called mekadrin. Mekadrin means to comb the animal. The animal is really suffering from all the filth that fell on its back. And the question is, are you allowed to engage in this on Yontif? And Rabbi Yehuda says, yes. Mipnei shu oso chabura. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you're not allowed to comb the back of the animal because we're afraid that the teeth of the comb are so sharp that when he combs the animal's back, he's going to inevitably dig in to the skin of the animal, and it's going to cause what's called a chabura. And that's a malacha called chovel. Right, if you draw blood from an animal or a human being on Shabbos or on Yontif, you violate Meleches Chovel. Avol Mekartzefin. However, we're going to allow him to do a superficial kind of combing with a comb that has very few teeth to it, because then he's not going to make a Chabura. But in any event, the Rabbi Yehuda is not willing to apply the principle Adam Bol HaMamono, like we said before in Akaza. Rabbi Yehuda said if you allow him to do Akaza in this place, he's so bold, he'll do Akaza in another place and he'll create a mum. Well, why not apply the same principle here and say that we shouldn't allow him to do this process of Makartzefin with a larger kind of comb, right? And because he might come to use that tight-knitted comb, and he's Adam Bol HaMamono. And that's in fact what the Chachamim say. We're afraid that a person is so bol al mamono, he wants to make sure that the animal doesn't die from all the tsar, all the pain of the stuff that got stuck on its back, the tit, you know, the cement or whatever it is, that we're afraid that if we allow him to do makartzefin, he's going to come to do makadrin. Vitanya, and we have a b'risa ezu kider ezu kirtzuf kider hu b'ktanim. It means that the teeth are very small and sharp, and they're near each other. There's very little space. For those of you, I don't know, most of you probably never will have no clue what I'm talking about here. But if you ever had a child who came back from Gan, Rachmana Litzlan, with kinim, how you call it in English, lice. Oh my gosh, that's like catastrophic. And they won't let your child go back into the Gan until they, you know, make sure that they know. Lice. So you have these lice combs, you know, and they're very thin. So that's called makadrin. Okay, ain't makadrin, because makadrin is this kider v'ktanim. Why? The osim chabura, because we can be sure that if he uses the kidur, then he's going to make a chabura, which, as we said before, is meleches kovil. But kirtzuf is gdolim, right? So you have this comb that has large teeth. The ain't osim chabura. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda is going to make a distinction between Mekartzefin, which he allows, and Mekadrin, which he prohibits. So the Gemara says, Hasam, over there, I'm just trying to get to the Mishnah. Anyone has to leave, you know, I know that it's already 8:30, but I just want two more minutes of time to get to the Mishnah. Hasam, de'ish shavik lei mayis. In the case of Hakazas Dam, why is it Adam Bol HaMamono? Because if he doesn't take action and the animal is suffering from severe blood pressure, high blood pressure, the animal is going to die. And Amrina, therefore, Amud applies the principle of Adam Bol HaMamono, and therefore he's not going to allow you at all to do the Hakazah. He's not going to allow you to direct him towards the vein that's not a mum. But Hacha, here in the case of Kirtzuf, with the larger combs, there Rabbi Yehuda is Mekil, because he's Shavikle, even if he would leave the animal as is, without combing it, and wait till after Yontif, Tsara B'Almahu, the animal is suffering, but the animal is not in a life-threatening situation. So therefore, Lo Amrina, we're not going to apply the principle of Adam Bol HaMamono, that he's so overwhelmed that if you allow him to do Kirtzuf, he's going to come to do Kidur. So the Gemara now asks, So Rabbi Yehuda Maishna Lagabi Chametz the Gazar Umaishna Lagabi Kirtzuf the Logazar. Rabbi Yehuda says that you're not allowed to be Bodek Chametz after Zmani Sur because we're afraid you're going to come to eat it. But in the case of combing the animal, he's going to allow you to use this large tooth comb called Kirtzuf, and he's not afraid that you'll come to do Kidur. So in other words, Gemara now says, drop the whole discussion about Adam Bol Amamona. Here in this case, Ain Adam Bol. But nevertheless, when does Rabbi Yehuda say that if you allow this, he'll come to do this? And then in other cases, he seems to say you allow this and he won't come to do this. So Gemara says that it's different. Why is Rabbi Yehuda worried about Bedikas Chametz? Lechem Belechem Michlaf. Because two types of bread, one which is lechem, which is chametz, the other is matzah, michlaf. You know, it's very easy to make a mistake and confuse it. Therefore, Rav Yehuda prohibits doing a bedika after Shas Isur. He might pop it into his mouth thinking it's matzah, when in truth it is chametz. But kidur, but kirtzuf lo michlaf, kidur and kirtzuf are two different types of combs. We're not afraid that if we allow him to use the broader comb, the wide teeth comb, he's going to come to use the smaller comb, which is called kidur. And therefore, we're not being choshesh. There's no fear of a mistake between the two. Okay, then, Mr. Shembelinet, tomorrow we start the famous Mishnah of when the Rabbanon, at what time on Yudalit did the Rabbanon prohibit chametz. And for that, we're going to have to learn a lot about Hilchus Eidus, about testimony. Okay, then? So we'll stop here. Wish everyone a great day. Yeshua Kochacha.